Go. We're on. Yes. Good afternoon. Now it is 3:30 on July the 22nd, and this is our regular monthly discussion session. I want to thank everybody for being here. We are being audio recorded, and we're going to get started. Just to let you know ahead of time that Dr. Adams has three quick things. One, I think she's going to include with one of the other items on the agenda, but that she does want to make certain that we do have the opportunity to speak to, and it will help us. One of them is an agenda item this evening. So our first board member is deals on Simchick. Nothing at this time. When you think of something, let me know.
I will.
And Ms. Disney Brombeck?
I just wanted to thank everyone for their flexibility. The scheduling this summer has been pretty challenging with everything. I did have a meeting in Tallahassee. I can do that in committee reports. I'll wait.
And do committee report. Okay, thank you. Okay. Mr. McCain, do you have your usual long list today?
No.
No? You don't? Okay.
I yield my time to the Senator from Kansas.
Well, until they show up, then it's Chairman Johnson.
Is there any reason why I was skipping?
Mrs. Amendment.
Because I wanted to.
I think you better go to her. She's got
I just looked at that long list and I thought it was McCain. So what can I tell you? I am very sorry. I am so off my protocol today. You just wouldn't believe it.
It's been a long day.
Yeah. But it's been a long day for everybody. All right. Ms. Jimenez, as always, you are welcome to change the order. Those are your items. You change them any way you want to.
All right. So I'm going to begin with the legislative platform.
Okay.
I have a copy that is a very, 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 very rough draft of what I am hoping to put together for us in terms of our platform. And basically what I envision is having one sheet with the key points that we would bring forward, and that's the first sheet. And then as we spoke this morning when we were talking about the snapshot, and I actually am thinking of calling it something like our chapter in our story, because I really loved image that was brought up. But this is kind of what I envisioned, and what I did was I put in the topics around general information, finance, academic initiatives, and then the top unfunded / underfunded mandates with the reference to statute, the mandate, and the expenditures. So this is just what I would like is your input. I know from our conversation this morning, for example, we should include the National Merit Scholars, the number, and then I don't know how to represent it, but something about the number of students that participate in, like, in ROTC that lead them to these service academies. Mm-hmm. So this is just for you all to take a look at and provide some feedback. I chose adequate funding, issues under student learning, local control, and our critical operating needs, millage, and capital outlay of school construction as the top five issues. But it's really your call. I just wanted to show you what I'm thinking about in terms of how to make this happen. But my timeline for this is I have asked the superintendent to speak with her staff at their leadership meeting about what the staff thinks should be some of the legislative priorities. I'm in conversation with Mr. Morrison to help me with the finance side of it and the wording to make it happen. And so what I envision is by the last board meeting in September, we can have a final copy, and I'll bring a draft to the next discussion group. So this is just for your more for you to read and look at. And then I just wanted to explain, I attached this section on the moonshot moment. And the reason why I did that is because I am serving or volunteering on the steering committee that's working with literacy. And we were talking about advocacy, and the conversation we had at the last meeting was that if we really are, this is one of our top initiatives in the school district, it wouldn't make sense to advocate separately for the literacy piece. it would be more powerful if the literacy piece were part of our legislative platform, and this would be, for lack of a better word, a white paper to share with our legislators and with whomever what we're doing, because what's powerful about this is that we tend to go to legislative meetings and tell them what we need. And I think it's very important for us to say, look, we know what we need. This is what we're doing locally to make it happen, and we need your support. And that's a different story, and it creates a difference. I knew you were
less shoes.
Anyway, so this is, you know, we have that. So I really would encourage you, because the other piece of this is getting your input as board members in terms of what you would like, based on your experience with the school district, to include in our legislative platform. Is there any teachers out there, or you know, anyone that works with the kids that have issues that we can piggyback on? I see we have our teacher representative here. You know, that's an opportunity where we can work together in a united voice to advocate for children. So I look forward to hearing from you guys.
Thank you for all the work you've done on this again. Ms. Disney?
Yes, thank you. One of the things I think we should consider is a position on vouchers. And I think we had steered away from it because we were concerned about, you know, the political, you know, there's a lot of political pressure about vouchers. I'm not exactly sure why we didn't include it last time, but my concern about the voucher issue is that because it is corporate scholarships, that's $2.5 billion that is not available in the operating budget of the state of Florida. And we get 36-37% of their operating budget. So, you know, you can do the math, and, I mean, not we personally, but the education in the state. You can do the math and see what a huge financial implication that has on us. Most of the time we think of it in terms of, well, we don't have that student revenue if the student has a voucher and goes off to another school. But that is just a very small piece of the amount of money that education misses out in general. And it isn't just education, but social services doesn't get their share. Medicaid doesn't get their share. You know, and all the children, the agencies that benefit children don't get their share of the state budget, because that money just doesn't even come into the coffers at all. So it is more than just losing the students' revenue. It's losing a whole big chunk of revenue from the state.
And I don't remember why we didn't include that either.
I don't either.
I remember the discussion.
Yeah. But I just think it's something that we should consider placing on the you don't have to take a position about whether you think vouchers themselves are a good or a bad thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think it's more about the appropriation of those funds and what it means, not just to education, but just to children's services in general.
Well, I agree, and we sort of have consensus on including that.
So would you want me to include it under funding, under adequate funding?
I think it needs its own separate funding. One of the suggestions we might consider not having in is, if you need the space, is critical operating needs village,
yeah,
because we already have a referendum, so we wouldn't go out for it anyway, even if they said we didn't need it.
What's your timeline? This is.
I'd like to have a rough draft for our next discussion session, which is in August,
right,
and then to have a final document for approval at the last board meeting in September. So that gives us a little.
Any other? So we still have a chance, Mr. McCain.
At what point do we still, every year we've had the same thing about the to reinstate the 2.0 mills down under capital outlay? I mean, that's fine, but that's 6 years ago now it's been.
Yeah.
At what point does it become just, do we want to just keep putting that on? And I'm asking a question. I'm not saying we shouldn't have it on there, but I'm saying, you know, every year we have this thing, yeah, reinstate the 2 mills, and that's not the new reality is now, 1.5.
And I think that's why that's why this is here, because I ask myself the same question. Some of these items, we repeat the same item year in and year out, and it's important for us to realize, okay, what is realistic and what can we let go so that we can actually try to move forward issues that really may have some success.
You and Karen know these knuckleheads a whole lot better than I do. If you think it would do any good, fine, I don't care. I mean, but I'm sitting here thinking, I look at it over and over and over again now for 6 years. It's like...
How important, my question would be, how important is it that we leave it in?
I just have a thought on that, a concern more than anything. I'm just seeing with this push now to maybe try to encourage school districts more forcefully to share capital dollars with charter schools. I think that it would be in our best interest to just make sure we maximize the dollars that we have available for these types of expenditures so we have more to work with. But that's just kind of my gut feeling.
That's a real reality we're facing. Dual enrollment is not here, right?
No.
Okay.
And
so
I don't know,
I would offer that as an unfunded mandate, dual enrollment has about 275,000 this year on dual enrollment.
275?
Yeah, about 275,000 this year.
291 to be precise.
291 to be precise.
So you have a number five, so we under your top unfunded mandates.
Right. Yes. And I, what I did was we can add that one.
Okay.
Because I just took the top right. five that were the most expensive. And dual enrollment was further down, but I could make that.
It was just surprising to me that it disappeared out of any legislation this year.
Right.
So I do think that's a concern that most of us share.
I just had a question. Is the Florida School Board Association also, do they have a lobbyist working on rates? I mean, what's their position? Do you know if they have a lobbyist who's trying to reinstate this? I mean, because then it would be very important for every school district to get behind ECA.
This has been in every platform for the last 6 years. They'll be meeting again in September to finalize the new platform. But I don't have any reason to think it will be removed.
Well, we're going to remove the critical operating needs village, but is this one we want to stay in?
The 2.0 mil?
Yeah.
I would say based on the possibility of it still staying, I mean, I'm sure that they would want our support as we want their support. Mm-hmm. So I think it's worth mentioning.
I agree.
Okay, so we'll keep it in. And then I wanted to draw your attention. Under student learning, I added just two ideas very quickly without any background research. In terms of the school grading scale, I know that today in our presentation we talked about the changes that are being made in the school grading, the way we grade our schools. And I just wonder if we would like to give them some feedback on how that's working. You know, we heard this morning that, you know, it really is an unfair system, and the commissioner has made an attempt to make some changes, but is that enough? You know, do we want to speak up about that or not? I mean, it's kind of what I'm getting at around that issue.
Okay. I think we feel like it's purer than it has been. It is going to be learning gains is a pretty important part of it, lowest quartile learning gains and performance. So I don't know that that for this year,
okay,
you know, that would be concern that would raise to the level of legislation. Because I think it is a new way of looking at the grading scale.
And I think that because the commissioner has addressed it, mm-hmm. that we don't want to make it a legislative issue. We want to leave the commissioner on that task and continue to communicate with her. Not only did she make the lowest quartile gains important, but she put total learning gains as another one of the pieces of the calculation. So
right.
I think that's important.
I'm glad to see VPK on there. you know, we have a lot of support for the pre-K, but we actually can't do it unless we do blends because we can't make it work financially. And there was a slight increase this year, but I think that it can be updated, but it's still an issue.
Okay, and then how about in terms of supplemental academic instruction? We only have one school, but I'm thinking this is an issue for all the school districts.
This is an unfunded mandate. SAI dollars are, for years, have been going to reading teachers or whatever, but the lowest $300 for any school district is an unfunded mandate. And we know from at least the last couple of years it's about $300,000 per school.
So we're going to add that as a number 6 under unfunded mandates. Anything else? Any comments? We put a lot of work into this, Ms. Hernandez. Thank you very much. Mr. McCain, have you thought of something?
Nope. All right.
I'm going to ask Mr. Morrison. We have an item on the agenda this evening you wanted to speak to. Is that correct, sir? So if we can, and I noticed that Ms. Martinez is here. Can we go back around, maybe? Or we can wait. It doesn't matter. Okay. All right.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon regarding this agenda item. The agenda item is to request authority for the superintendent to issue purchase orders to various vendors for reoccurring expenditures. And I think we just have to step back a little bit in history to look at what our past practice was, what the intent was when we went through the NEOLA process with respect to procurement, and where we ended up. Past practice was that any individual items over $25,000, the superintendent would bring it to the school board for approval, individual items. During our discussions at the NEOLA session, that was increased, or the discussion was the amount was increased, the threshold was increased to $50,000. The discussion was $50,000 for individual items, so that the board indicated an interest in raising the superintendent's individual authority. Where we ended up was somewhere a little bit different. We ended up with the policy reading that the superintendent is authorized to purchase commodities and or contractual services where the total amount doesn't exceed $50,000, period. So the superintendent cannot spend more than $50,000, period, without your say-so. So that's where we ended up. So the practical implication of that means that I cannot pay FPNL for the light bills. I cannot pay SCREMP for our insurance premium, etc., etc., etc. There are a couple examples of how this logistically affects us on the ground. Tonight you have also on the board agenda item O, which is approval to issue a purchase order to Anthony's Flooring Design for some tiling work that we need to do at Pelican Island. The vendor is currently doing some work at the 800 wing over at the Flick, and we're trying to keep him busy until this goes through. We brought the RFP to the board last year, and it was approved with an estimated cost. But we don't have explicit authority to issue a purchase order over $50,000 for that work to be done. So what we're asking for is this laundry list here. These are just reoccurring expenses. We will still bring architects, engineers, those kinds of things. We actually were in a panic mode over the summer because we couldn't buy textbooks. We had to try to make sure that we consolidated the order to the approved amount that you approved on the previous board meeting. So it's affecting us logistically on the ground. We've met with Ms. DiAgresta, Mr. Chuma and I, and there is some language that we have seen in Martin County, and we're looking at some other school districts that we felt would be appropriate so we would not run into this situation. So we just wanted to explain to you that it's not that we're not being transparent or we don't want to bring these things to you, but where I think the intent was and where we ended up were two different areas.
Ms. Disney?
Well, we outsmarted ourselves there. So if I hear you correctly, you're going to give us a list of recurring expenses to approve temporarily until,
until
we
can get this
policy
fixed. Correct.
All right.
Yes, ma'am. That's what tonight's agenda is about.
Do you have any advice for us on that, Mr. Benston?
This is really a how does the back of the house operate, and it really requires the back of the house to provide you with this is how we operate, so can we craft a policy that allows this back of the house operation. So that will be coming, I think, from staff, and these recurring vendors, if you will, these are not to exceed amounts. I mean, I don't want the board or the general public to think you're about to stroke a check to this vendor for this grand total. These are not to exceed amounts as you work your way through your fiscal year. It's just a way to maybe ease up operations a little bit.
Ms. Jimenez.
Yes, I just had a comment and a question. If I recall the context in which this was made, this was under our previous superintendent, where we had a bill for legal fees that came to the board after the fact, and we were trying to figure out, okay, how do we, and at the time, context is everything, we were looking to decrease our legal fees because we were being criticized for the amount of money that we were paying for legal fees. So that was a particular, in my recollection, that was one of the drivers behind this. And I think that there was some value to that cap, if you will. And so my only, and I will bring this up at the board meeting, is I think that the legal fees, again, are here. And there's an item there. And I think that's the only item that I would take exception to, because that's where this stemmed from, just making sure that there's that awareness, because we are trying to keep our legal fees, you know, as needed, obviously. But that was our way of checking, not that there's any implication that our superintendent is spending funds for legal fees in any way that is inappropriate, but that was the check that the board had built in, and as one board member, I would like to continue keeping that check in place.
Any other comments? Okay, so we have the laundry list for this evening.
Yes.
We know that direction has been that we're going to do a revision to the policy, and that will have discussion at the time.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, board. And thank you, board, for
this. So now you can go pay for the light bill, the water bill.
On the board, Florida, if you need it.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. Ms. Enchik, have you thought of something else you want to talk about? No, not at this time. Ms. Disney Brombach?
I guess the student code of conduct. I think we do have
staff here. If you want to do that at this time,
sure.
Okay.
And the student code of conduct is on the board agenda tonight for a public hearing. Okay, we set a public hearing. We went over what the changes were. And so Dr. Torres Martinez, if you want to come forward, we've spent a lot of time looking at this. Mrs. Jimenez spent time looking at it and gave us some good suggestions. Actually, we found a couple of things that we might have to change. But for tonight, is there anything that we ended up that we were going to make any suggestions for tonight? I'm trying to remember. We just looked at this yesterday. Or were we going to make give them the information on the technical corrections? Okay.
That's what I understood. Okay.
So tonight we're having the public hearing. We're going to accept it the way it is. And then we have some technical. In our board policy, we went to board policy and we looked up a couple of things. And a couple of things that you pointed out were things that we would like to bring forward for technical corrections at the next board meeting. So let's go over those, and that'll answer some of your questions. We're being a little evasive here. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, as Dr. Adams stated, it's up for a public hearing tonight, and based on our board policy and the public hearing piece, it needs to kind of stay the way it is, and those suggestions that Ms. Jimenez had recommended could be accomplished through resolution and the consent agenda at the next board meeting. There was one of the statements, though, instead of including it within the code of conduct, which is more of a qualitative piece, and a goal could be included in the superintendent's letter. So that doesn't have to go through any adoption because it's just the introductory letter.
Okay, they don't know what it is.
Okay.
We don't have
anything. Yeah, they don't have anything, so you've got to do a little explanation of what you're talking about.
Ms. Jimenez had asked us to include within our statement something positive about our goals. So there's a sentence that says, our goal is to provide a school climate that is welcoming and academically / socially engaging for students. And we had looked at where to include that, and we had looked at the preface, but if we included in anything within the body of the content of the code of conduct, that would require additional approval from the board, and it cannot be approved tonight. But if we include that specific sentence within the letter of the superintendent, which is just a cover letter, we could add it without delaying the process. Okay.
Yes, so are you talking about the preface on that second paragraph?
Correct. We were going to add it after the paragraph reads as follows. The school board believes that the best discipline is self-imposed and students should learn to assume responsibility for their own behavior and the consequences of their action. The school board has zero tolerance of violent, disruptive, or inappropriate behavior by its students. And we were going to add, our goal is to provide a school climate that is welcoming and academically and socially challenging, engaging. We can't add it there. We're going to add it to the superintendent's letter, so the message will be out there,
okay,
if that's okay with.
Okay, my
follow-up?
Okay. This is the follow-up. Okay, so my question around this was my concern with that statement. The school board has zero tolerance of violent, disruptive, or inappropriate behavior by its students. In my estimation, that perception reflects a zero tolerance run amok from the perspective that any inappropriate behavior can be part of this zero tolerance mentality, and that's not the message we want to send to our students. And the statement that you're adding was actually a statement that I discussed with the superintendent in a very different context. And I'm not going to be able to find it, but the context was that we have a section in our code of conduct that lists all the student responsibilities, that lists all the parent responsibilities, and that lists very few school responsibilities. And again, I thought that if we're trying to send our students a positive message, the school should make a commitment to provide as their responsibility a welcoming school climate, and I can't remember what the other part of it was, and an environment for learning that they where they want to be in school, and that would be the school's responsibility. So those are two. I was talking about two very different things.
Yeah.
So
let me speak to the first one because we did look at this yesterday because it requires very close scrutiny. The inappropriate behavior with zero tolerance, disruptive, violent, inappropriate, is actually in your board policy. So we can't change that without changing the policy.
Right.
Okay? So, right. That was the first thing we looked
at. We're not saying that you can't change it. You can't
exactly
change it tonight.
You have to set a public hearing.
Right, because it's actually reflected in a different policy, and your code of conduct was pulling that piece out of your policy 5600 and putting it in the code of conduct just for some reference. So I'm not saying you can't change it, but not tonight. We need to go through rulemaking to do that.
Okay. So we looked at that, but that's why. The other part is sending the message through the superintendent's letter. I think we talked about the idea of putting a philosophical statement in the code of conduct, but we felt that it was very appropriate for the superintendent to add that to the letter that's in front of this code of conduct.
And that's the very first page.
And that's
I don't have it
first.
Right. I think it is the very first thing they see.
Yeah. Okay. Did you have any comment about that? Because we did talk about that.
Certainly the superintendent can because you're essentially implementing this code, your philosophy and how you see student discipline, that's certainly something that you can flesh out in your cover letter to parents and to students. That's certainly appropriate.
But when we talked about it, we also looked in board policy to find, language that...
Right. The student code of conduct is being adopted as a rule. So we're going through this very technical rulemaking process. And if the board wishes to establish its philosophy, you can do that. We can do that. We just have to properly notice it as a rule. And that's really the only issue that we've been talking about is what can the board approve tonight versus what can they possibly approve the next time we go through one of these processes. So that's we're kind of like doing a live demarcation. You can do these things, absolutely, but not tonight. So the compromise to try to get that thought or that philosophy out there was to use the superintendent's cover letter to parents and students as a way of saying, as the superintendent, here are my philosophies. That's not rulemaking. That's the superintendent. You as the board are required to go through this painful rulemaking process. So that's kind of the line of demarcation we were trying to draw, what you can do tonight.
Ms. Disney.
So I'm finding myself very frustrated with this process right now because today is the 22nd of July, and we have to notice 30 days for a public hearing, and we have to have code of conduct in place before the first day of school. So now we're talking about this with no opportunity to table it and get it right, and so it goes as a whole, complete, correct document on approval. The timing of this is absolutely unacceptable.
And there are two more technical pieces that must be added that came from the legislature.
From the state.
From the state that have to be added, and we just received that information. So the timing is very bad, and we've discussed the timing of reviewing the code of conduct as having to start much earlier, with the board understanding that most likely there'll have to be an insert because you can't wait until the last minute to get it printed and get it to the schools on time.
The technical inserts are viewed very differently than board editorial. We've had a year to do board editorial, and now we're doing it with less than 30 days. A technical insert is a very different thing. It came from the Department of Education. At this date, it gets put in at this date.
Right.
But for the board to not, have this sooner so that these things were done in a proper timeline, it's just, I think it sets the board up for embarrassment.
Wow. Well, this is information that was, just recently presented. It's up to the board to decide even if they want to do it. I mean, we felt that, and we were looking at it in the discussion, the information, Mrs. Jimenez did a very thorough job of looking through it. She brought some suggestions forward. So now it's time for the board to decide, do we want to move forward with that? Doesn't have to be in this year, or you don't even have to do it, but it's for consideration. I thought she brought some good points forward.
Yes, please.
With all due respect, Superintendent, any board member has the right to challenge anything that they see in this code of conduct. The problem is that it's being done at this late date, so close to the start of school. The problem is not a board member challenging the language in the code of conduct.
Okay.
So where are we?
I would like to be able to go get my computer so I actually have this in front of me while we're talking, but I feel like I'm at a disadvantage to not know what is being said. Not being able to see.
Ms. M. Jeffrey.
This is very detailed.
This, well, and this is where, and I
correct me if I'm following this wrong. I want to remove the content and the actual issue of the change. If what I'm experiencing here is that we have, you know, our packets, our code of conduct, our time to thrash it out, it's been advertised in the proper legal way, is coming before us tonight at the board, and a board member wants to insert some changes, has gone to the superintendent, perhaps staff, and maybe came up with a good suggestion. I'm not saying it isn't. But it's, I'm at a disadvantage. I don't have the information in front of me. And based on one person's meeting, it's how can we change this tonight? And can we put it on the front letter? Or because we can't change it because we haven't. So I'm probably feeling disconnected because I don't have it in front of me. And it might be very valid. It sounds actually as a positive suggestion, but I am frustrated as well. So for a simplistic timeline, is that this has been in print. This has been put out on our agenda. This is on backup. We are not, and I want to confirm with the attorney, we are not, we can modify the code of conduct, correct, after this evening?
Yes, ma'am. The agenda item for this evening is a public hearing for the final adoption of the revised student code of conduct as it was advertised and as it's placed in your backup to your board agenda. What the law under the Administrative Procedures Act says is any substantive change to a rule after advertisement, the rule must be re-advertised for that public hearing.
Well,
substantive change. Technical or typographical changes do not have that requirement. We have actually a process in our board policies of how to accomplish a technical correction. But substantive requires re-notice, re-advertisement, and then having that public hearing.
So based on that, aren't we faced with that change anyway? Let's say we take whatever the change is, we adopted it today in a consensus and then brought it forward as an agenda item tonight, spoke of it because it was advertised in our backup. Our backup, isn't that not fairly advertised then?
Yes, if it's a substantive change. If it's not a substantive change, then we have to follow the process in our board policy with regard to just a resolution. I think what you're hearing from the superintendent, from staff, is, and I don't think anybody has said it, they're struggling with a deadline for printing the code of conduct. And that's kind of the struggle from the staff perspective, is they've got a deadline to print. And when you back up that deadline to print, it's kind of now we're going to be late.
Yes, Ms. Hernandez.
And to add to that question of the frustration, you know, Mike, this is a question to you.
Sure.
What is the purpose of the public hearing? A public hearing gives the impression that you are going to hear the public. But by definition, by the time we get to a public hearing, it's a done deal. Why do we go through the motion of making believe we want to hear the public? Not that the public ever shows up, because unfortunately, when we do our budget, when we do a lot of these, it's almost a running joke. You know, you go through all these motions. Anybody knows the superintendent? No. Okay, we want. You know, so I get it, but the bottom line is, if no change, if we can't listen to the feedback and say, wow, that's an excellent point, let's incorporate it, is there any way moving forward we can do this differently? Because I think that's what we're getting at here, is that if this process is done in an earlier timeline, and if, as a board, we have a conversation about how the public may give input once that document is ready before this public hearing, which is really not a public hearing in that sense, then maybe with your board input, with your community input, your document is ready and we don't have this frustration that it's a done deal.
And even if we, I mean, there is one very egregious wording in here that says that when kids are, I don't know if it's expelled or suspended, it says it's for the remaining of the year and 1 year. And that is totally erroneous. And later on, the same wording, but it says not to exceed the rest of the year and 1 year. So that's an obvious mistake.
Yeah.
And that we can change. Mm-hmm. But some of this other stuff, I know that we can't change it, but I just think it's important to uplift the fact that we sign off on this, and we need to make sure that we as a board demand adequate timing so that we can do our due diligence and not come across as, well, it's too late, we got to approve it, and we know that it's not the best product. We want to serve with excellence. So, you know, I'm not trying to be combative, but I sometimes feel that unless, you know, this happens, then we don't have the conversation. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cause any frustration to any of my board members.
No, not at all.
But if I could just say,
yeah. So then and because of the point being procedural and being able to hear and listen, what do we print in house, and what's the first meeting, and will that be enough time to sufficiently, does it have to, wouldn't we have enough time to re-advertise for the first August meeting to be able to
30 days?
Yeah, it's
28
days. 28 days. Okay. Can I answer Jimenez's question about the public hearing? Well, it's what the statute requires. The statute requires that the board adopt at a public hearing. Okay, so it's the statutory process for going through the rulemaking. In I'm going to say 99.9% of the time, if any government that goes through this process gets comments during the public hearing and you think we want to substantively change what we're going to do. You have that discussion, you direct staff to make those changes, and you re-advertise and you bring it back. That's what the statute calls for, is that re-notification, re-advertisement, and you bring it back. I don't remember if we've done it here, but I've experienced that as well. At public hearings, someone comes forward and says, this doesn't work and here's why, and the government says, you know what, you raise a very good point, and the changes are made, you re-advertise, you bring it back. I mean, it's just what the statutory process requires that. This is just a wrinkle because of timing, I think.
Yeah. And could I mention that there were two things in board rule that we would need to change. The definition that you just talked about, that's in board policy. It's written two different ways in board policy. So what I found out is that there are some things that we have to have a public hearing on, and there are other things like that you can bring back for,
what did you call it, Suzanne?
A technical correction during the
technical correction. But it does require it to come back to the consent agenda to do that. So in the process of this, and I don't know how many people are on your committee that do this, but there are a lot of people that give input to this. And there were a lot of changes this year, not to content, but to moving everything around.
Right,
so
it was kind of reconfigured to flow better.
So if we truly want the public hearing to be a public hearing, we have to do this in June and May.
That's right. That's what we talked about.
And so when we have these changes, we re-advertise, we have another final public hearing with the changes. We have neither 30 days to advertise or time to wait with the print. And we all know that extra page that's going to get printed and sent home with the kids is not going to get inserted into this code of conduct book that we spend a lot of money printing. So I just, I want to make sure everyone understands how frustrated I am with this process, and that we are in a position now where we have no choice but to put out a product that isn't correct. Mm-hmm.
How did we make, if today's the 22nd and school starts on the 18th, is that correct? That mm-hmm. still doesn't make the 30-day, does it?
We advertised 30 days ago.
With the advertising.
Yes.
Not 28
days ago.
Okay.
So we've had this conversation a couple of times about starting earlier. That mm-hmm. is a given, okay, because we ran up against this. And we may have an insert every year because of late legislation, but we shouldn't have an insert because of errors in the or if policy needs to be changed, it gets done sooner.
Well, may I make a suggestion?
Certainly.
At the very least, if the superintendent was willing to add that to her cover letter, I would say that would be...
Yeah. And the cover letter is mine, and I think it's a positive statement. So I think wording something like that in the code of conduct... But
well, because unless somebody could see it a little clearer, how could we clearly resolve this? We can't. I mean, it's a... We don't have the 30-day requirement. We don't have, I want to make sure I'm clear, even with printing in-house, we haven't advertised before the 30. We change anything, as you said.
Not the letter.
No, I'm saying not the letter.
Right, the letter.
So the answer is the letter, and then going back and re-advertising and opening for public hearing, but it won't be printed. Although it would fall.
Yeah, we most likely will print and have an insert. You cannot print and wait until the middle of, end of August, I guess it would be, and then go to print.
What do you want to do, Board?
The student conduct code of conduct is typically given out at the first days of school.
Right.
It's reviewed by the teachers. They send it home and have it signed by the parents. And then if there's an insert would come in a later time.
Well, just to clarify, I don't have the changes that she's asking for. They sounded well, and that's a whole other issue. Whether it was that change, this change, I had one, you had one.
Yeah.
I'd still want to see, you know, I still wouldn't blanketly sign off on that either. So, and they sounded good. So, would like at some, if we're going to move forward in this, that I would need that stuff ahead of time as well.
Yeah.
But so the only answer is to move forward and have a cover letter.
I'll look at the cover letter. We'll have to move forward with the public hearing tonight.
Correct.
And then bring back corrections. Some of it's corrections.
I think that if we have, I'm sorry.
Would you like to be recognized?
Thank you. Yes, go ahead. You know, we also set ourselves up by not delivering the code of conduct to our students as they start school. And something happens in that 2 weeks or 3 weeks before it's printed, and we have not done our part for the student, you know. So I don't believe that holding that until the end of August is the answer either. And they have to have it. We can't rely on internet access, and I believe they signed for this as well.
That's very important.
Ms. Bennett.
So I think that what we can take from this is that the board should have a timeline for the student code of conduct review for the next academic year to make sure that the public hearing falls in May in a time when parents and community is able to actually give meaningful feedback and not during the summer months when people are away. Because you're right, we can't make any changes, and any changes that we can make are only technical and can be done via resolution through consent. But anything substantive, you know, and it requires a board discussion. I think Ms. Simchick is on track. It's not because I say it or Matt says it or you say it. We need that opportunity as a board to hear each other's conversations and not just everybody, you know. I can go to the superintendent, but I have no authority to go to my board members unless it is at a public meeting that's in the sunshine. So, you know, there's a challenge there, but if we can make that request as a board, then moving forward we can avoid that. And, you know, we should be mindful of any other documents like this, any other situations where we want to make sure we are addressing in a timely manner.
Dr. Adams, you did say you already have changed the schedule for this.
I asked to work backwards,
right?
You know, instead of
and allowing us plenty of time for a second public hearing if needed. Scheduled.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. And Mr. McCain.
do have an item, and that is superintendent's evaluation instrument. Ms. Stang asked me about the professional standards evaluation, and I believe that one board member, when we were doing the evaluation, did say, well, we can go ahead and add a little box up at the top of the professional standards. We could not do it that day because we had to use the instrument that we had adopted. But moving forward, I did tell Ms. Stang that I would put it on the agenda just to have consensus of the board moving forward, and then we will bring the professional standards that we adopted, we've already adopted as part of the instrument. We will bring that forward when we bring all of this forward. So, okay? Is that all right?
This is for the summary of score. The box.
Okay. Nothing else is going to change. Everything. Right. Nothing is being deleted. That is the only thing. Is there will be a summative. There. Okay. All right. Ms. Simchick.
Well, thank you. I want to take this opportunity to say publicly, since I've already had the media approach me, congratulations.
Thank you.
And since I am new and I did not go through the process of the selection, when will the board be discussing a future? Where will be the timeline on that? For future discussion, we're talking about timeline.
That would be up to the board. Okay. I felt it was appropriate to put it in August discussion timeline. I did, you're going to have one new board member at the August 26th election. As I stated on another issue, when that happens, that person doesn't have any authority until November the 18th, but they can be involved in all the deliberations and everything that is going on. So I would think in our next discussion session we can, and I applaud Dr. Adams for giving us plenty of notice on that. And I also, when Ms. Wixom came in, she thought we did this at a meeting, and I told her no. I said this was, this was not advertised as a meeting, so we didn't do that. And I said, and Dr. Adams met with each of the board members according to protocol, which is the chairman, then the vice chairman, and then the longest seated member, which was Ms. Disney, then Ms. Jimenez, and then you. So
I missed that.
You didn't realize that?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You just thought you were last by choice? No. It was myself, Mr. McCain, and then Ms. Disney, because she was the next senior board member, yourself, and then Ms. Simchick was last. So that's the proper way to do it. So that's the way it was done.
The way it was going, I didn't think I was going to be able to tell you because Matt was going to be out of town.
Yeah.
He was going to. It was lunch.
He was going to run to lunch, but that worked out fine. So that will be that will be a discussion at that time, and you can get some history of what was done. Ms. Disney has been through two superintendent searches. Mr. McCain and Ms. Jimenez have been through one. They have been through one. So, and then the person who's elected in my position will not have been through any at all, so you'll be on equal footing with whoever that is. So, okay, Ms. Disney Brombeck, do you have anything?
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Jimenez.
Okay. Well, I'm going to cross off retroactive pay because that's subject to executive session discussion. It's not public discussion. And then under School Health Advisory Committee, I just wanted to just touch base with the board. You all did receive copies on July 8th of the School Health Advisory Committee report, and I just wanted to make sure that you had an opportunity to look at their focus for 2014-15. It just reinforces the report that I shared with you verbally in terms of some of the concerns around the school health plan and the nurse ratios at the schools. So, this group is paying attention to this, and sometimes if the board member says it, it's interpreted as if it's a board member agenda. But
I just remind you, I am your liaison to that committee, and my responsibility is to share with you what I hear. It's not what I want to say. It's what the committee is discussing at the community level. So I just want to make sure you all have a chance to look at that.
Thank you very much. Mr. McCain. And I don't have anything else. Ms. Simcher? Ms. Disney?
I'm waiting for committee reports.
Okay. Ms. Menes?
I have one final item. I don't have copies for all of you right now, but one of the things that we had talked about a few months ago was our new board member orientation and reviewing that process. And I volunteered to look at some of the documents that would be pertinent for that person to have. And I've had a conversation with Ms. Stang, and because we have everything online, the easiest thing to do is really to maybe curate that information and provide a sheet that has the links for those documents. So what I've done is I've divided those documents into four different groups: general, students/academics, budget/expenditures, and personnel. And in parentheses, I put the departments that house those documents. And I'll put a copy of this in your boxes so you can look at it, especially Ms. Simcher, since you're the newest one. You know, are these the types of documents, just knowing that they exist, helpful to a new board member? There's always way too much information, but it's also good to know what's available and to be able to access it with a click on a web page. So I will make copies and place this on the board. I just put in your boxes. I just want you to know where it's coming from.
Thank you. Mr. McCain, I don't have anything else. Board member committee reports.
Yes, an MPO. The Elder Board Florida continues to be an item on every agenda. I did go to staff and ask for two different parameters to be quantified. One was whether or not the closest school to the tracks, which is Gifford Middle, is going to suffer from any noise or vibration issues, and I have not had a report back from facilities. The other was transportation, the buses crossing the tracks, and before, I guess, is Mr.
Moore
still here?
Yes.
Is he still?
No.
Okay,
no.
Before he left,
he did do
mm-hmm. a report on that, and it has been submitted to the county. The engineers have also, that are doing the work for the county, have started their work, and they'll have some similar observations. I don't go there to make an opinion, I'm only to get collect information and to take information. The other issue that is going to impact the children of our county is the Medicaid issue. Florida has changed its Medicaid system, and it's an HMO system. All the families needed to have made a choice of who their provider was going to be by July 17th. And one of the huge impacts to our families is going to be transportation. Medicaid provided transportation for things like dialysis and different doctor visits that Medicaid is required to pay for. It used to be that our GO line provided and was reimbursed by the state for providing that transportation. They're no longer a provider. It's all third party. And there's going to be a gap from the time that our citizens try to access their transportation, realize they can't, and then they have to choose a provider and then wait to the beginning of the next month before it's available to them. They're going to be without transportation for essential services. So we had a conversation, the members of MPO had a conversation, and we went and reported this out to some of the non-traditional transportation providers like the Veterans Association and the Courtesy Cab, and let them know that we're going to have citizens who are in this quandary, and would they please try to devise some pricing structure that would be affordable to these people so that they wouldn't be put completely without services. So that is just something that we and our teachers need to know, that's going to add another stressor to the family of these chronically ill children that we educate.
Okay. Ms. Simchick, any committee reports?
No, nothing in the Ellesmere and Sebastian planning and zoning affects school
district. Ms. Minutes?
Just the Economic Development Council. They met on July 15th, and the bulk of the meeting was the presentation from a consultant, Ms. Jane Addy, on the countywide economic development positioning analysis. At our meeting, she talked about how they went about their work, and we all received invitations for that Friday's meeting. Unfortunately, I was unable. I had a work in my other job, I couldn't go, and it really was a shame that we were not represented, because she actually, when she spoke at the EDC meeting, she talked about the importance of our public schools and education in this strategizing, and so that was a void with the general public on that Friday when she didn't give us the entire plan at the EDC, she just talked about the process and highlighted some of the work that was done. So I don't know how we can, in the future, make sure that we are present at some of these strategic meetings. It's hard to tell. It's just hard to tell.
I was interviewed by one of the consultants who came to, ask about, or, talk to people about it. It wasn't her, but it was one of the other gentlemen that was part of it. But I never heard of any. I got your email, but I wasn't aware of the report. Was there a written report?
I don't know, but I'm going to try to find out if there was a PowerPoint or anything.
That would be good.
Okay.
There was a PowerPoint. There's no written report.
No written report, okay. Yeah,
there's a PowerPoint.
Okay.
And their timeline.
Mr. McCain?
Nothing.
And I don't have any committee reports.
Thank God I didn't have one for you.
Oh, you do?
I do. I have a guest.
I know you do. I'm sorry?
Nothing.
I'd like to invite Diane Fannin, principal of Highlands Elementary, to the table. And Mrs. Fannin had put a request. Actually, I mentioned it to the board that they were interested in looking at the name of the school and considering a change to the name.
It was on the ballot.
And so she actually had given us a few ideas of what they had, and then we wrote back to her to say, well, there's a process that you have to follow. And so what she did is she went back and followed the process, and she actually has a recommendation. And so before we took it to a board meeting, I wanted the board to hear the background and what the recommendation is so you could have some discussion about it.
So thank you for the opportunity.
You're
thank
welcome.
You for allowing me to speak today. I don't want to be too long-winded. So I wanted to share one of my, barriers at school with Dr. Adams was there was a low enrollment. There was a very poor school climate. There was a very poor reputation, with coming to Highlands. I did a little background. For instance, 46 families didn't want to come that were incoming kindergartners. So I found that I went out and found out what were these barriers that people did not want to come. Went to the realtors. A big part was the name. While this was going on, I was getting the background, we were charged with being an innovative school. And so I broke our staff, parents, and community members that were a part, and you saw the video I shared, into academies. And so this was a huge piece where it brought the collaboration, and everybody found out how much they loved working together. And so the academy was, they loved the academy. One of the academies was College Bound, that we need to start getting our kids and our families who have never had the opportunity to go to college, don't have that hope for our families at a 90% free and reduced lunch, that we wanted to give those families and those kids a belief that the college or career is a hope and something that they can accomplish. So all this was going on, and in those conversations, the name change came up. So we talked about it first as a faculty, and some community members that were involved. Indian River State College is a huge part of our school
now. They're going to be a big part next year. Whole Child was a big part. Healthy Families. Beth Dingy started to come and saw what was going on, and she just thought, oh, this is like, I want to be in this because I see what's going on. So the community piece was a huge part. So we talked about it as a staff. We went through the barrier. We went through all that. And what the faculty and those members said, we want to look at having a name change. So we put some names out. Each academy put their name and what their reasoning behind it was. And they all shared amongst each other. And then they voted. And they came up with top three names. Well, then we had that showcase night, the last week of school, because we wanted to get all those new families that didn't want to come a chance to come and see all the great things we were doing. And I called each and every one of those kindergarten that parents that didn't want to come, or, you know, everyone that was trying to get an out-of-zone waiver, invited them to come, you know, come and see. And a lot of them came, and they saw, wow. It almost took away a lot of that. And we had a voting. We had a voting at that time to see, and they had to put their last name and what they wanted as a school name. And Highlands was an option to keep at Highlands Elementary. Overriding, it was Indian River Academy, came out of that. But when I submitted that to Dr. Adams, she said, no, there's a process. You have to go school board rules. So I said, okay. So we took that. And then I took from the ballots people that were not necessarily for it, for, you know, wanted Highlands to stay, invited SAC members, parent involvement team members, alumni. I actually invited a lot of parents that came through Highlands as students themselves, and now their children are in there, because I wanted to have that mix of group to be able to talk about it. Staff members that have been there for a long time knew that we wanted to include them, as well as new parents that came out of Indian River Club or Falcon Trace that want to come, but they felt nobody else in my development is going here. So they were a big part of the committee as well. And we talked about it. We talked about the pros and cons. We brought our community members came to that committee member meeting as well, and it was unanimous that they feel it's time. We're an innovative school. They feel that Indian River Academy connects all the community members that we have with Indian River State College. We've again partnered with the Indian River Club. That's a whole new connection that's right in that area. So in the academy, they wanted to keep that hope that families and those kids believe that moving on and getting yourself ready for college-bound or career-ready is a hope for those families. So I hope that wasn't too long-winded. So that's where we came to it.
So that's how we got to Indian River Academy. The board, it is the board's authority to approve that. And Dr. Adams, I appreciate the fact that we did get a little bit of background before it showed up on an agenda. But it's time for us to talk about that and talk about the philosophy and talk about how our support for innovative school needs to be and those kinds of things. I want to make certain that I have the figure correct. You said 90% of your students are free to use that?
It was 89 point.
Okay.
This past
we'll round
year,
up.
Yes, ma'am.
We will round up.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I just wanted to. Board member comments, please.
I'll support 100%. If that's what you guys want me to call it, it's fine.
Yes, Ms. Jimenez.
Yeah, I support it too, and I just want to thank you for your leadership and for reaching out the way you did to the families, to the college, to the different partners, because that's really, you know, what it takes. So thank you. Because that's a lot of work and a lot of time. But your passion is evident, and it's greatly appreciated.
Comes through, doesn't it?
It does.
And we can't really poll the board, but you're welcome to make any comments you want. I think we already have three that are supportive.
About 15 years ago, I heard David Lawrence speak, and he spoke about the perils of a child failing 2 years in a row. Most of his talk had to do with ineffective teachers, and that's not where I'm going here. I'm just thinking about the children that have 2 years where they don't find success in school, mm-hmm. and how difficult it is for them to recover after two ineffective years. And so I have, since that time, felt the sense of urgency, you know, that we have to we have to fix the things that aren't working in our schools. So thank you for having this.
Thanks.
She's got a very strong vision for her families and for her children, and it's just not Mrs. Fannin that has that, because you can't do it as one person, but what she's been able to do is to pull together that school community and parents who've never set foot on that campus before. But it's because they've reached out to them that it's happened. So,
on the partnership with Indian River Club and with Indian River State College is phenomenal. Our next step is to ask our attorney, where do we go from here?
Under your board policy, the superintendent is required to bring the recommendation from your name selection committee to the board. And what your policy says is you have the authority, of course, to change the name of an existing school. And your policy says that it will be done by a supermajority vote of the board, which in this case, with this board of five members, means four votes in favor in order to pass the request. Okay, that's procedurally what will happen next.
Thank you very much.
So, Board, what I would like to do is I'll bring this forward at the next meeting, which will be August 12th.
Okay. That's my birthday.
All right.
Good on.
Will you be able to get signage done?
Yes. I was going to ask about the branding. I was going to ask about the branding, yes.
Yeah. Actually, she has a marquee on hold.
and
waiting
everything.
For approval, yes.
They're all waiting
by their phone. Yeah, so I think it's a good sign.
Fine.
Yeah.
Oh, fine.
No. Yes, she is hopeful that we can. This is one of those things when our July, when we only have the one meeting, and so it kind of delays it a little bit.
Is it managed? You had your pen up before Mr. McCain wanted to.
Oh my God! Do you want to speak?
No, he already spoke.
He did.
I have a question on another topic before we close.
Thank you so much for your support and your time.
Thank you, we're
excited.
Well, we get to vote on our support, and we can't poll the board because we're not allowed to do that, and our attorney would just not be a really happy camper.
Well, thanks for letting me share the history.
Oh, absolutely. That was important.
So keep up the good
work.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
So this is the medicine.
I was going to say, we don't have anything else for the superintendent. We covered those other two items in discussion. So, Ms. Jimenez?
Yeah, I have a question for the superintendent. I saw an article recently in the Tampa Bay newspaper about a legislative change that went under the radar that was a surprise to Hillsborough County about third grade retention, saying that children cannot be retained for more than 2 years in third grade, and then they have to. Where would that, I think it was Senate Bill 850. I don't know.
I was
going to
say I've seen it.
And I just wondered if that's something that, we are aware of, what the implications are.
I want to say it was in the 850 train that kind of mowed through that last night of session. I want to say I've seen it.
Okay, if you get it to
I didn't see it. You could never retain a child more than two times. Ever. But obviously, people have, and that's why they had to write it in legislation, because of it. So thank you for pointing that out. I really didn't know that it had been like.
I mean, I see that as an opportunity. What can we do to avoid getting to that point?
We don't do that.
I just asked.
But to your point, 1 year behind is a serious repercussions to students as they move, and two is the statistics are very bad in terms of graduation rate for two retentions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nothing else to come before the board? See you at 6 o'clock.
I know how to stop it.
And you add to that, Karen, the teacher. These